I'm all right. I woke up from a nap. I do that sometimes when before we record, and sometimes it's a good idea and sometimes it's not.
Was it a bad idea today?
No, today was a great idea. I woke up feeling refreshed and ready to go.
Fantastic.
How about you? How are you?
Oh, I'm terrible. This is Cuckoo Bananas. Cuckoo Bananas coming to you live. We're not live. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined, as always, by my partner in slime, Kate Beatty.
Oh, hey.
Kate, how are you?
Hanging in, you know.
Trigger alert! Trigger alert! I'm putting a trigger warning on this pod right now. Today, I'll be talking about physical illness. I'll be talking about things that are gross. I'll be talking about blood.
And guts.
If that's not what you're about, or you're not about that right now, this is not, you put this episode on the shelf and then you come back to it when you're in a better headspace.
You wait until your stomach's a little stronger.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is you need.
So how do I begin my journey? Okay. So 2 weeks ago, I'm taking a nice little walk, trying to be healthy, taking a nice little walk, right? And then I feel bubbly in my tummy and I think, oh, I got to go poo. And then it's like an emergency. Like, I've got to really got it. Like, that feeling in your gut where, like, you have to go to the bathroom so badly. So I'm like, I'm not near my house and I'm on foot. So I'm like power walking back to my house. I had to go to the bathroom so bad that they've been doing construction outside my house for years. And there's a porta potty. I was like, do I jump in this porta potty? Or do I wait the 2 extra minutes to go to my house?
Knowing you waited the 2 minutes, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I can't picture you being in that situation and then also taking on a porta potty.
The given what happens later, the story would be so much worse if that were where it began. So I go to the bathroom and nothing's happening. But it don't feel like a false alarm. It feels like a 5-alarm fire. And okay, I gave you a trigger warning. And I'll repeat it. You know, here's what I wanted. And we all human beings, we all know this feeling. I wanted that instant relief of diarrhea. Mm-hmm. My stomach was killing me. I wanted that goosh.
Right. You have like that, you have that cramp.
Yeah.
And then you finally get to the bathroom and it's like.
Like just a bucket of water coming at me. Well, that did not happen.
Oh.
And I'm pushing harder than I should push, and my stomach is killing me, and I get a little bit out, but not, the feeling doesn't go away.
Mm.
So I go upstairs, I lay down, I'm in a cold sweat, I'm like sweating, I look like Gollum from Lord of the Rings. I'm like hunched over. My dad was like, what's wrong with you? I was like, yeah. I was like, not making sense. I go upstairs, I lay down, I just imagine the pain of when you really have to go to the bathroom, sustained. That's hard part, because that feeling is a feeling that we've all felt, but it should be like the most 5 minutes.
And yeah. Then
where you gotta go when you take care of it.
Right.
This was like an alarm going off, but nothing happening.
Oh, so no.
All night I'm in and out of the bathroom trying to make something happen. Nothing's happening. I force myself to throw up. I throw up maybe twice, and then I start doing dry hacking.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not even anything in me. I'm at this point highly dehydrated. The only thing that makes me feel kind of better is taking a hot shower. And I shower a lot when I'm sick. I took about 10 showers that evening.
Oh my God.
Like, I was literally in the shower. Because, like, the only time I could, like, you know, pain. And I'm sure people who listen to us know this feeling, and it's the worst part of the human condition. Pain, it numbs the mind, it cracks the mind. It's so hard to stay rational and reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
when you've got pain, because it's like a really loud alarm going off.
Right. It overrides everything else. Yeah. Your body's like, we got to handle the pain. You can't fucking think about functioning.
Yeah. So the only time I felt halfway okay was in a hot shower. So I'm standing in the shower like, okay, all right, this is all right. Whatever. I'm just a little dehydrated. I just got to hydrate myself, blah, 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 blah. Finally, the next morning, by the way, I never sleep. Sleep does not happen.
Right.
Trigger warning again. I start to poo blood a little bit, and I'm terrified, right? Because I've never done that before. That's never happened before. You know, duty's supposed to come out, not blood. Blood's supposed to stay in.
Right. usually the blood stays on the inside.
Right. But you've heard tell that this is something that can happen, and it always sounded scary, and it happened. So of course I also have. I'm a hypochondriac, or the more new wave political correct way to say it is health anxiety. I have health anxiety. So I'm Googling blood. What could it be? What's good blood and bad blood?
So many things. It could be so many things. Too many things.
If it's bright, that's better because it's like a, like a hemorrhoid. But if it's dark.
Right, it's surface.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm terrified. I'm in a tremendous amount of pain. About 2 a.m, I like text my boss and I'm like, don't think tomorrow is going to happen. Don't think this whole work thing is going to happen tomorrow.
Not really seeing that in my future.
That does not seem like it's on the menu. So then around like, I think, did I pass out at some point? I don't know if I did pass out or no, I didn't. Maybe it was when the sun came up. At some point, it was the morning, and it was like there was no crash. I was like, okay, now we're going to the emergency room.
Right. We've made it to the morning. I'm still feeling like this. That's right.
Now it's Friday morning in the emergency room, and they really have to get a better system for allowing someone to take themselves to the emergency room, because I had to park in the guest parking, which is like a mile away from the emergency room. The emergency room only allows you to like. Curbside, let somebody off. Like, what about the lonely people who have emergencies?
Right, who are bringing themselves to deal with their goddamn emergencies.
Right. So I go in, I'm a sweaty mess, you know, but now we're in a hospital, so no one cares. And, you know, whatever. They're like, take a seat. I'm like, I don't think so. Cause now it like hurts to sit down. It's not my butt that hurts, but somehow just when I lay down or sit down, the pressure of my stomach hurts more. So standing up feels better. So, you know, I go to triage. They're like, you can sit. I'm like, nah, I'm good. I don't want to sit.
Oh, no, no, thank you.
So then they put me in a hallway. And I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a nurse. And as I tell you in every episode, me and Kate are not healthcare professionals or mental health professionals. Everything you hear in this podcast is for entertainment purposes. Putting people in the hallway, that couldn't have been the plan all along, right?
It can't be. I think that's the most ridiculous part of being in an emergency room is the fact that it's literally just hallways lined with beds. Like that can't have been how they planned it. Right. Somebody didn't sit down and say like, all right, well, so we'll have this nice big hallway. We'll clutter it with beds. Like it's just.
Right. And then if you're real sick, you could earn your way into a room.
Right. Then you might earn some privacy. You might earn a curtain.
It's even. A caste system.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, and you're it's a doctor, you're waiting and waiting, you know. So I'm like, I'm sitting there, like, I'm just like, first I'm like sitting politely on the bed that they gave me in the hallway. And then I'm like, what am I putting on airs for? So I lay down and I'm just like, oh God. Finally a doctor comes over, is like, come with me. Come with me. I gotta do a rectal exam, which I've never had before. And I was like, okay, whatever. So she takes me to the room, closes the curtain. I immediately drop my pants, show her my dick. She's like, wait.
Wait?
I'm so embarrassed. I'm like, but I thought this is what I did. I mean, I'm not thinking straight. And she says, okay, get up on that bed. So I go, okay. So I take my pants off before I get on the bed. And she's like, no, you keep your pants on. Then you get on the bed. Then you pull your pants down while you're laying, I guess, to avoid seeing your dick.
Or maybe just so you feel more vulnerable.
Right, I know.
It's entirely a fucking power play.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you get on your back and put your knees up to your ears first.
Yeah. So, so I mean, I feel terrible about it because she handled it like a professional, but I felt bad. I was like, this woman didn't want to see my dick. I probably bummed her out, probably ruined her dick.
Can I tell you just like mild deviation? I did that once when I went for a massage. Before the massage, me and all my friends are talking and they're like, are you going to go in nude? And I'd never had a massage before. So I was like, yeah, I mean, fuck it. Right. Like, yeah. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. So I like, you're told to like go in the room and get ready or whatever. And I went in the room and I got completely naked. The guy came in and he was like, you're supposed to keep your underwear on. And I was like, okay, give me just a moment. I'm like, I got on the massage table fully naked,
right,
face down with my head in that fucking hole, right, ready to go.
Right. What's with these situations where you're supposed to be naked, but only at certain points?
Right.
I mean,
right? Come on.
I'm Gollum at this point. I'm barely thinking straight.
I'm hardly a human. Right. And you want me to know when I should get naked.
So I go up on the bed, pull my pants down. She gives me the 1-2 skidoo. Getting a finger up your butt is exactly what you think it's going to feel like.
I mean, it depends.
But if you're like, oh, what's... yeah, well, it depends. Well,
it depends on the context, I think.
Sure. But if you're someone who's like afraid of that kind of examination.
Yeah, like, it's everything you fear.
It's what you think it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's what you think it is.
It's the finger in your butt. Yeah. It's something going the opposite direction,
right,
of the directions things in your butthole usually go.
And there's no there's no polite way to do it. You know what I mean? It's just
no. Your
finger in the butt.
Yeah.
So she says, I think it was a hemorrhoid. I think it was hemorrhoid blood, which I didn't know I ever had a hemorrhoid, but I guess you could get it from pushing too hard.
Yep. That's where they come from.
So then they put me back down. Then they go take me. They go where to take a scan. They do a CT scan. They scan my belly. I have to say I am blessed in that I've never had a surgery and I've never been in a hospital really.
Mm.
So it was all new to me. Like I've never been scanned. I've never been in a machine like that. And then the lady comes over and she's like, I'm going to give you something for your pain. I'm going to give you morphine. And I was like, wow, that's pretty hardcore shit. I was like, really? Is this going to be bananas? And she was like, no, it's pretty appropriate for what you have. And I was like, what's it going to feel like? And she was like, you're going to feel the 3 W's, warm, weird, and woozy. And then you're going to feel all right. And I was like,
she's like your shaman on this journey.
Yeah. I was like, all right, put it in me. I did feel the warm. It feels like you're blushing. Like I felt the warm in my face. And then, look, as someone who hasn't done any drug for like 8 years or whatever, it's a get out of jail free card. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I get to do a drug.
Yeah.
And I feel bad about it. So I'm like, okay, we're going with it. And it's not like the pain went away. It's like the pain was there, but distant. Like, I was like, I still feel there, but I also don't care right now.
Right. It doesn't necessarily make the pain go away. It makes it not the most important thing going on in your head.
Going on. Look at your phone.
Yeah. Your brain is like, you could do other stuff now.
Yeah. I have to pee every 2 minutes because I drank so much water to try to make myself poo that I'm like, I have a full bladder. So I realized like no one will help you. So I just take my own IV bag. I just pick it up myself and then take myself to the bathroom, pee.
You gotta.
Come back, put my little IV bag on. I have what they call rolling veins. So it's very hard.
No.
So every time I go anywhere to give blood, I'm like a pincushion. They're just in and out. And someone was learning. And she...
You're not the person they should learn on.
I know. She fucked me up bad. I don't know if you could still see on both of them.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And then finally, like, the nurse who was teaching was like, I'm just going to fucking do it. Because... We just
was that
get
for
this
placing
going.
The IV?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the worst. You don't want somebody practicing that, especially if you got a hard vein to stick.
Yeah. You know what's funny? The thing about healthcare is that they don't fucking listen. And I know, and I've talked to a friend about this recently, and she was like, yeah, but you're a white guy. Like, imagine not being you and how bad it is.
Yeah.
And I don't know that pain because I haven't lived it, but I can intellectually understand it because even as a white guy, they don't fucking listen to you.
Yeah. I was actually talking to a friend today about my experience when I went to go have my son. So I had my daughter first, right? And when I went to have my daughter, my epidural didn't work. The drugs just did not work. I felt absolutely everything that happened and it was a nightmare. And then I decided, because this is how the human brain works, that I would forget all of that misery and pain and have another child.
Sure.
And when I got in there, you know, I gave them the whole spiel about what had happened the first time I went. They tried to place an epidural multiple times. The drugs never ended up working. I was in pain the whole time, whatever. And the anesthesiologist tries to place the epidural and the same thing is happening. It's just not working. And it'll work for like a few minutes. I'll feel okay. And then I'm like, dude, this is not working again. So he keeps coming in and adding stronger meds to my epidural. And then finally he comes in because again, it's not working. And he says to me, okay, I'm going to give you the stuff that I would give you if you were having a C-section. This is the strongest stuff that I can give you.
Right.
And he puts it into the line of my epidural and the entire world just starts spinning. And I hear like I'm tripping balls. Whoa. I am gone. And at this moment, like, this is when I knew I was having a boy. Cause like we didn't find out. And as all of this is happening, I'm just holding on to my stomach. And I remember thinking in my head, like, it's just me and you, little boy. Like, it's just the two of us right now. Like, they're not helping us. They're not helping us. And we got to get through this. Like, and then I started vomiting and everything. And this anesthesiologist had the nerve to tell me that it was in my head, that I had come in with the preconception that it wasn't going to work. And so that's why it wasn't working. He got off his shift and the next anesthesiologist came in. She came into my room. I was sobbing and talking to her about what had happened and everything. And she's like, okay. She's like, you just need to make a choice. I either need to just take the line out or I need to take it out and replace it. You know, like you can go through the rest of the way without it.
Yeah.
And I decide that I want her to try and place it again. And she goes to pull back on my epidural line and there's blood in it. And there shouldn't be blood in it. This goes into my spine. There shouldn't be blood in this line. So this man placed he fucked up. He placed the thing incorrectly. He injected these drugs into my bloodstream, which I don't even know how fucking dangerous that is or what kind of lasting effect that might have had on me or whatever. And holy then has shit. The fucking balls to tell me it's in my head.
Holy shit.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Wow.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard when a doctor doesn't listen to you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's freaking bananas, man.
And it's scary because you're doing shit to my body.
Right. And it's like, don't tell me that I don't know. Like I have senses, like I'm feeling something. Yeah. Like I, oh, by the way, I also had a root canal this week. So
just for funsies.
Yeah. Just for fun. I was like, you know what? Let's also like do a freaking 2-hour procedure. Where I fucking my teeth hurt every time I go to and this time I went to the dentist this time and I was like, listen, before you start, we're gonna have a talk. I said, every time we do this you give me Novocaine doesn't work on me. You say, are you feeling it? I say no. You say, ah, yeah, you are. And then you start and then I have the worst 30 seconds of my life of excruciating pain. And then you go, oh wow, you really can't feel it. And then you give me the good stuff. Let's just, for shits and giggles, let's just jump over the pain.
Let's just go straight to
it. Go straight to the good shit. So she goes, no, we got to start where we have to start. So she puts it in and it works. The tooth is dead. I'm like, okay, good. She starts. and it's good, but the problem is it doesn't last. It wears off quickly. And I don't know if this is part of every root canal or just the particular one I was having, but they cauterize you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, I came in the room and I saw a lighter and I was like, what are we doing here?
What are you using to put me out?
When they cauterized me, she says, you're going to smell and see smoke. Because you're on fire. So they cauterize me and I immediately scream and they're like, oh, I guess you could feel that completely. So then they give me another one and then they're like, oh, this is the big guns. And it's like, give me the big guns to begin with.
Right. I'm telling you, guns. We start with the big guns.
Novocaine doesn't do shit for me. It doesn't. Yeah. It makes me feel like, I am not numb from Novocaine. I'm sorry.
I feel like, you know, generally, I mean, and again, we're not medical professionals. I don't know the ins and outs of how this stuff works. But I feel like in general, like, yeah, there are standards and parameters like that doctors have to operate within when it comes to dosages and what medications to use and stuff. But like, if you have a patient with this history,
right,
you should be documenting it. Because I know that that's a problem, too, is that it doesn't get documented.
Right.
You know, the dentist that comes into work on you should see, oh, the last time we were in here, we had to use 3 shots of Novocaine before finally going to whatever. Like, it needs to be documented and it needs to be personalized. You need to understand that not everyone is going to be the same. My body is going to respond differently than somebody else's.
Right. Exactly. Oh, boy. So anyway, I go home. They send my ass home. And I feel better. They give me antibiotics and they give me an anti spasm drug for my stomach. But now the real pain starts. And this is, I guess, the thing I really want to talk to you about today is health anxiety, because I start to worry that I have colon cancer. I am afraid of cancer more than anything. Cancer scares me. I am terrified of every kind of cancer. And I don't just have health anxiety. I have like the newest form of health anxiety, which is I go online and try to like find information. And, you know, I went to grad school. I guess I'm an okay researcher, but it's still Google. I'm still, you know, reading 10 things and they all 10 could be wrong. They're not actual, you know,
scholarly resources or whatever.
And then my mother tells me my grandfather had it when he was old. And so, but I'm talking to friends and my friends are like, well, if it's old, then it doesn't matter. Like, it's not like he had it before. Anyway, through my research, I find out that I have less than 1% chance of having it.
That's good.
So that's a good thing to feel.
Yeah.
But can I tell you about my sickness? Like the notes app in my phone, first of all, when I'm doing my research, right? If I find something that makes me feel good, like I read something that assures me of something, I screen grab it so I can
get back and look at it. That's smart. That's some self-care right there. Proud of you.
See, okay. I was going to say, I was pointing that out as part of obsessive compulsive disorder. It doesn't feel healthy.
So to me, I think that like you're not going to overcome obsessive compulsive disorder. You're not going to just stop that. So try doing it in a way that leaves you with a better feeling or whatever. And if, you know, you can combat some of the negative feelings and the negative notes you're taking by also saying like, well, I'm still going to do the Googling. I'm still going to go down the rabbit hole.
Right.
But I'm looking for the positives and I'm capturing the positives.
Right. And I'm looking at odds. That's the thing. People freak out because they see cancer, but always then look at the odds and look at your age group and look at statistics and learn how to read statistics, because there's a lot of bullshit statistics. You could say like people with, people who don't drink or people who don't smoke are like 20% less likely to have it. But like that's 20% less than the 1%. Like there's a lot of and they'll be like, it's on the rise. And it's like, okay, because I was seeing things going, younger people are getting it. And I was like, oh, this is terrifying. I'm a younger person.
Right.
but it, you know, it went from like, you know, 108% to like, you know what I mean? Like it's yes, technically, but it's still less than one.
Right. And I just finished my statistics course my last term.
Nice.
So this is all like fresh in my head. You really do need to be able to look at statistics critically because you
Right.
have to look at who's authoring the statistics, what their motive might be, the language they're using to frame it, what their sample is, who out of who, where did you
Right.
get this data from? And
Yeah.
it's if you look at statistics more critically, I think it's a little bit easier to keep control
Yeah.
of
Right.
your, worry.
Right. But the so I know it could be worse. Like I could be going online to try to convince myself something bad. I'm going online to convince myself something good. That's kind of like a drug in a way, because it's like I'll feel nervous and then I'll go back to it and then read again.
Right.
And I make lists in my notes app about, I made a list like reasons I don't have colon cancer. Like no
Right
one,
up at the top.
right, I am under 50. I have no first degree relatives that have it, blah 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 blah. But I'm just like terrified. I'm terrified, and it's like and then I did something stupid where I was looking at the paperwork that they gave me. I read my CT radiology report, and it said that I have a small
Hiatal.
hiatal hernia. And so I let me Google that for 3 hours.
Right. Let
And
me go
oh,
down that rabbit hole now.
can it strangle me? Do you need surgery? Oh, and then I'm feeling it inside, like I could feel it. I'm like, it's in me. It's in me. There's an enemy within. So
Been
today,
infiltrated.
I know. So today, I actually went to the gastro doctor, and she was like, none of she was not matching my energy.
She did not catch the
Yeah, my energy was, this is very somber, this is very serious, lives are on the line. Her energy was like, you're young. She was like, you're young. It was probably food poisoning or a bacterial infection. The antibiotics they gave you work, which means it was probably just an infection. I have to come back in like 2 months for a colonoscopy. But she was like, don't worry, there's probably that you I don't think anything's wrong with you. You're definitely not old enough for cancer. We'll just see. We have to see if it's like maybe Crohn's or
Like
ulcerative colitis.
IBS, something like
Right.
that.
Something that would keep going. So I'm like, she's like, she starts talking about diverticulitis. And I was like, oh, my mom has that. And she's like, everybody's got that. Whatever. Yeah. She's like, it's like crow's feet. You get it when you get older. All it means is wrinkles and you're. I was like, okay. And then I was like, she wanted to leave. And I was like, but I have more questions.
But wait, I'm not
Yeah.
done with you.
I was like, what about the hiatal hernia? And she's like, ah, whatever, you're born with it. No big deal. A lot of people have it. Go fuck yourself. Like her vibes were not at all where my vibes were. And I was like, I've been reading about it all, I've been reading about it all weekend. I actually went and read that if you elevate your head, when if you elevate your bed, better for it. So I went out and I Amazoned these elevators, right?
Oh
But
my
I just
God.
used two to make
Right.
my bed slanted now. This is before I even went to her. And I'm thinking, she's telling me it's no big deal. My bed's already at home looking
I've
weird.
already modified my bed.
I read that you can't lift weights. She was like, ah, you lift weights. Her attitude was like the she was like, here's she was like, oh, here's your diagnosis. And it was a piece of paper with this shrug emoji printed on it.
Want that. I
Yeah.
want that doctor who just has like little slips
Yeah,
with like meh.
that was her vibe was like, this is a checkup, you're done, come back
You're
in
a baby and
2 months,
this is a checkup.
come
Get
back
out of
in 2 months. Now do I feel a little better? Yes. Do I feel like it was anticlimactic? Yes. I can't be this nervous for 2 months straight. I just can't
No.
be. So I'm not gonna, but will I feel nervous again as I get closer to the colonoscopy? Yes. Will I have to keep reminding myself it's not cancer? Yes. Am I afraid of being put out because I've never been put out before? Yes.
Yeah,
But
I feel that.
I'm trying to think from the drug angle of, hey, you're putting something in you to feel weird. That's something you haven't done in a while. That's a few
three W's.
So it's over, but I don't know. I've been truly, truly cuckoo bananas for the last 10 days straight between my teeth and my butthole and my stomach and this cancer and that cancer. Because after I found out about the hernia, I learned that could lead to esophageal cancer.
Oh, God.
So I was like, oh, do I have esophageal cancer?
Right. Is that what's happening instead?
Right. But here's where I feel like I'm not getting better. I'm getting worse, which is what scares me. Because I'm in therapy and I meditate, and why aren't things getting better? I've been beginning to think, okay, less than 1%, that's still somebody. Why would I not be that somebody?
Yeah.
Who am I to not be that somebody who does get it?
You know that I have that feeling, who am I to not go blind?
Right.
And it's a double-edged sword. Sometimes it can be a very comforting feeling, like, who am I to not just have things happen in my life? But when it's something like, you know, be less than 1% that has colon cancer, who am I?
Right. Yeah, no, it doesn't help me. It makes me, but I try to, like, just grasp reality. And
that's all you can do, I think. I mean, and I think that's what any mental health professional would advise you to do too. That's the first thing. I mean, I know for me, anytime I've had an anxiety attack or anything, the advice is always like, ground yourself, look at what's around you, you know, get into your senses, get out of your head.
But you know what I was thinking about today when I was in the waiting room? I was thinking, one day I'll be 60, 70, I'll be going to the doctors, and then I'll die of something. No one dies in their sleep like a sweet little angel with no pain, right? We all die of something.
Yeah.
At some point, I might get cancer.
Yep.
It happens to lots of people.
Yep.
And I'm a weird age too, because I'm 38. So I'm almost 40, not yet. So I'm kind of, I'm aging
out. Not a girl, not yet a woman.
Yeah. I'm aging out of the young demographic into the old demographic.
Yeah.
Like, I think if this exact thing had happened 10 years ago and I were 28, she wouldn't even done a freaking colonoscopy. I think
probably
she would be like, whatever. You know what I mean?
You're a baby.
Right. So, but of course my OCD brain's like, well, if she says that, there's nothing to worry about, but if she's doing it, there could be something.
Right.
That's where I'm at.
I feel you. I mean, not in the same exact sense, but I hear what you're saying, and health anxiety is overwhelming, and I'm sorry that you're struggling with that. But to be fair and to give you credit, I think you're doing a really good job managing it because you're so aware of it. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't have, you know, the awareness to say like, oh, I'm doing it. Here I am. I'm doing the thing. And even though you're still doing it, you know you're doing it, and you know that you're doing it because that's what your brain's going to tell you to do. It's not because, you know, you're bad or wrong or anything like that. You're doing it because that's what you do.
Right. So how was the experience having your first kid? Not as bad?
No, probably equally as bad. I just didn't have somebody telling me that it was in my head.
Okay.
It was the same thing, though, where I got to the hospital, you know, they're doing all their checks and stuff like that, and they're asking me if I want an epidural, and I had already decided yes please. So they tried to place it the first time, and you know, they do the thing, I lay back, and I'm like, I still feel everything, and they're like, you know, just give it a minute, and you know, whatever, like. And I was like, okay, all right. I laid there for about 5 minutes, and the pain started getting even worse. So, you know, page the doctor. Hey, you know, this isn't working. All right, we'll top you off a little bit. We'll put a little bit, you know, more medication in there or whatever. Okay, do that. It works for like 10 minutes. I'm like, sweet, this is great. It's working. Wears off again. And that happened consistently throughout my labor and delivery with my daughter. God. To the point where I finally knew that the drugs weren't working, like as I was giving birth. I was like, oh, there's no way that drugs are working right now. There's no way that anything is numb.
Oh, Jesus. You know, they ask you about if you have any allergies to medications. They should ask you about tolerance. Tolerance should be something 100%. That is tested and part of your medical profile.
I can't remember the exact like data on it, but like I know redheads have a lower pain threshold. So like anesthesiologists know they have to give redheads more something or whatever. Like they're putting effort into this, but they're not doing it properly. Like there are individual determining factors or whatever that are going to dictate what kind of reaction you have to this medication. It's not, you know, one size fits all or whatever.
Right. Exactly. So you told me you were sick over the weekend.
Yeah. I was going to tell you because I didn't know if it might comfort you. It was a stomach bug.
You had a stomach bug?
Yeah. A lot of people I know had a stomach bug recently.
Wow.
And it sounded vaguely similar to what you experienced that like first night, that Thursday night or whatever it
was.
You know, like that cramping, very intense pain, but relief.
Wow. Is that what you felt?
Yeah, I was vomiting just like saliva.
Wow, okay.
It didn't even get to like the bile point. But my husband got it, my kids got it.
Oh.
So, I mean, it could also just be that thing going around.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Being a human is so rough.
Right?
It really is.
Just toil and strife.
I know. We're all just trying to entertain ourselves in between doctor's appointments.
See, for me, the way I think the way you feel about cancer is the way that I feel about aneurysm and strokes.
Okay.
And I don't suffer from health anxiety any more so than any of my other anxieties. But my grandmother died of a stroke. My mother died of an aneurysm. There's really not much that lets you know it's on the way. If there's one, like it's kind of hard to predict. The only real symptom leading up to it usually is headaches. So it looms over me.
Are there preventative things you can do?
Not really. I mean, like, you know, there are things you can do to take better care of your body. There are vitamins you can take that are good for your brain health and stuff like that. But I don't think there's anything in particular you can do to combat that. Like I pretty much any time I find myself at a doctor, I ask them to request an MRI just because I'm like, just check my brain because my mother died suddenly because a blood vessel burst in her brain. So if you could check that out for me, thanks.
Yeah, I think if I were a wealthy, wealthy person who could just pay out of pocket for everything and not even have to worry about coverage, I would probably be getting tests all the time.
Since I'm a child, and this is ridiculous, since I'm a child, you know, when you lay up at night, when you're like getting ready to fall asleep and you think about, I mean, I assume everyone does this, how you would spend millions of dollars, like if you won the lotto or something.
Of course.
Always one of like the first things I think of is, and I can picture it in my head, I want to rent like a UN style space, and I want the top specialists in every field, and I want them to do every test, and I want them to sit down and tell me how to take care of myself, how to optimize my health.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Right? Like that's like
I just got a boner.
Big dream, right? Like, that's hot. That's hot. A room full of doctors.
Oh my God.
Focused on me.
All that care. Oh my God.
You know, it's all funny. Those lab results. Oh my God.
I went so long without medical coverage in my 20s that even now, like when I'm in the emergency room, I do stop and think like this does feel good. It feels good to have eyes on me. It feels good to be cared. I know they're going to hit me up for a shit ton of money, but, you know, at least I'm being cared for. What's worse than pain and then no one cares or people don't believe you or something?
Yeah.
It's horrible. So let's change gears. Tell me something happy that happened to you or that's just making you happy.
I have felt ready to interact with people again.
Okay.
I've been feeling better about like leaving my house.
Good.
And like yesterday I went to a friend's house and I just hung out with them and spent time there.
I remember when you were a young lady, because you're much younger than me. you were big. You were very good at hanging out. Hanging out was one of your major skills.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Did just anxiety happen or?
Anxiety, PTSD. There's a lot of stuff. Like, and I have talked about this a lot the last episode, but I have traumatic experiences surrounding friendship at this point in my life. Like, I have a lot of really shitty friendship experiences. And I think that's part of what makes it hard for me is like, why am I going to go out and be vulnerable? I enjoy my own company. I have plenty of things to occupy myself, you know, but then I end up getting depressed because I'm not getting that connection I need, because I am a person that really needs that connection. And right. I am energized by being with others.
Of course, we all are. So you went over to a friend's house yesterday, yeah, and you hung out.
Yeah, we watched movies and we talked.
How do you feel? How did it feel?
It was lovely. I also, so another thing is I really, I love platonic intimacy in theory.
Okay.
But when it happens, I'm often really uncomfortable and I don't want to be. I want to be able to, like, I remember I went to see Captain Marvel with a really good friend and, you know, spoiler alert, I guess, the scene where it shows her like as a little girl and then getting up off the ground. It's a really powerful, yeah, moment, and it's a really powerful moment as a woman. And like, she grabbed my hand and we were holding hands for like a while after that. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking like, this is so nice, but also being like, oh my God, like, should I pull my hand away? And like, this feels weird. Yeah. And then my hand feels different than my other hand. And like, it's been a hard thing for me to figure out.
So what do you think is changing? Are you pushing yourself more? What's the difference that's happening? Like, what made you get up yesterday and make plans or whatever it is that got you to your friend's house?
I think I just made a decision to try and be myself again. Uh-huh. At some point recently, that I was like, you know, like, I have these life experiences and I have these things that have changed the way I interact with the world and the way I view myself and all of that. But I want to get back to that who I know I am at my core, who I've always been throughout life. Who, if I talk to a friend from the time I was 4 years old or 14 or 24, they would all say, you know, asking someone to describe you or like silly MySpace surveys and stuff like that back in the day, the word people would always use to describe me was effervescent.
Yeah.
And I have felt nothing like that for years now. I felt like a hermit. And I've remembered that I am effervescent and I do have that kind of energy, and that does make people happy and bring out good in people. And people do appreciate when I'm silly and I dance around and stuff. And it's not only just obnoxious because one person found it obnoxious. And it's not, you know, it doesn't have to be everybody's cup of tea, but for the right people, I will be.
Well, you know, there are people that listen to the show and they adore you.
Goodness, thanks, guys. I'm blushing.
You know, we're all laughing with you.
Yeah, it's been a very hard journey. I hate to use the word journey so often, but like, what else do you call it? To figure out who I am, to accept myself, and then to love myself.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of steps and it's difficult. And figuring out who I was really difficult because I was just a bunch of traits and interests I'd accumulated from the person I wanted to think I was cool at the time.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So once I guess somewhere in my mid to late 20s, I started trying to peel back those layers and figure out like, who are you? What are you actually like? What brings you joy? And part of that, yes, is bringing joy to others. Part of that, yes, is being a person that other people feel comfortable with or safe with, or like they can relate to, but that is not my whole identity.
Yeah.
And I think over the last 7 years, I have really worked on figuring out who I am, learning to appreciate, and then learning to love that person. And I now have a higher standard for my relationships. And so I think that gives me, you know, less friends or whatever.
Right.
But it gives me the right ones.
Right. It could attract better quality. If mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I have, a friend who I'm sure I've talked about, But she and I, we're like soulmate friends. And we refer to each other as life partners. She is my platonic life partner. Like we're walking through this together. You know, like we support each other. We're the person that one another calls when we need something and stuff outside of our romantic partners. But, she has been instrumental in helping me learn to love myself and helping me learn to love other people. And, you know, she's the type of person who you walk around with and she will stop every person she sees to tell them something she likes about them. I love your hat. I love your shoes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You have a great smile. Wow. You're dressed to the nines today. You look good. Like she's that kind of person. And to have someone like that next to you often enough, like that changes you.
I feel that way about my girlfriend.
Yeah.
My girlfriend is, she's bubbly and she's a light in a room. Like she walks into a room and she's a light.
Yeah.
You know, like she started a new job and she was like, what if the people aren't nice? I was like, babe, you become best friends with the people you work with, like instantly, like everyone literally likes you. Like I've seriously never met anyone who didn't like my girlfriend. And then like she started her new job and then the next day she was like, oh, well, me and her, we had lunch together. I was like, yeah, you're best friends with her, right? Like you're already best friends. Like
you already have a work wife.
Right, exactly. So like, you know, I try not to be a vacuum of her light because I don't want to suck it out of her. You know what I mean? But I do think we fit together well because I have a you know, as my therapist once said to me, I have a sort of quiet darkness.
Oh.
And she has
a feel like that needs to be the blurb. Quiet darkness. Like your eventual book.
Yeah.
Mike's got a quiet darkness.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's a light. She's a ray of sunshine.
Yeah. I've never met your girlfriend in person, but I can see that just based upon what I know of her through you.
Yeah.
She just seems like a little delight of a person.
She is a little delight of a person. And she's funny. I think, I don't know about other people, but I think I have to have a funny partner and a partner that I can laugh with. Otherwise, what are we doing in this world?
Yeah, and having made friends, this is a strange thing, but having made friends from out of state is what helped me realize this. Like, I have a pretty distinct sense of humor, and it's kind of New York branded. It's a little bit roasty.
Yeah.
Like, and people who don't get it must think I'm an awful bitch. And like, I really need someone who's on the same page with me.
Right.
When it comes to humor, I need to be able to be self-deprecating. I need to be able to roast you a little bit. You know, I need to be able to be really sarcastic and dry. It's who I am. So if you're not in line with my humor, like we're just not even going to get along.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So when I lived in Florida for 3 years of my life in high school, and we had neighbors who happened to have moved to Florida from Brooklyn, and we all got really close. Our families were close and everything. And we used to talk about that sense of humor and, you know, the way like we would bust each other's chops or whatever. And it became like an unofficial family slogan. And we would say, we kid because we love.
Uh-huh.
And like, that's what it is. Like, I'm picking on you because I'm kidding with you. I love you. Right. That's what I do to myself. Like,
if I don't like you, I'm just quiet to you.
Right. Like I'm going to roast you a little. That's part of my humor. I'm not mean ever, but I'm going to be silly with you. And I might poke fun.
Yeah. What are we here to do? What are we here to do if we're not here to laugh?
Right. Right. That's the only thing. Like it's only anytime you think of a film or whatever, like the answer and the antidote to like apathy or darkness or anything, it's always love, it's always laughter, it's always connections with other people. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's always it's always pitted up against the darkness. It's all these inexplicable things. It's music, it's friendship, it's love, it's the stuff that you just feel that you can't exactly quantify.
Yeah.
That's the real shit. That's the most important shit. That's what we're here for.
I think I shared this on our Instagram, but I want to say it now. This is a great quote from Kurt Vonnegut. I tell you, we are here on Earth to fart around and don't let anyone tell you different.
Fuck yeah.
That's what we're here to do. That's
what we're here to do. Yep. Yeah. Create. I wish I could remember the exact quote, but it's, I know it's create meaning in objects, create meaning in spite of objective meaninglessness.
Mm, wow.
Life is divine chaos.
Yeah.
That's the full quote, and it's to create meaning in spite of objective meaninglessness, which I thought was really beautiful. I'll always remember
that quote. Yeah, that's wild. Well,
so what's good? What's good, bro?
So I was preparing all of my life history to tell my gastro doctor, and I realized I've been a vegetarian for 9 years. I'm almost at my 10-year anniversary.
That's awesome.
I really, because I'm, you know, I'm old and dumb. So everything for me is like a few years ago. Like literally I'd be like, oh yeah, that was a few years ago. I was like, no, actually that was 20 years ago, Mike. Like,
right.
So I
do the same thing.
Yeah. If you had asked me last week, how long have you been a vegetarian? I'd be like, a few years. No, I've almost been a vegetarian for decades. A
decade. That's amazing. And that's a exercise in willpower, and that's pretty amazing. 10 years.
It feels good because when, you know, in my late 20s as a fat dude, I told people I'm a vegetarian now. Literally no one encouraged it.
Okay, bro.
People laughed at it.
Straight have up fun with that. It.
People were like, yeah, okay, see you in 2 weeks with a fucking pastrami sandwich. Ooh. And look at all you fuckers now.
Yeah. Good for you. Make it happen. Prove them wrong.
I fucking did. I fucking did. Yeah. Literally, there was not one single positive person in my life when I talked.
Cool. I mean, we don't live in the best area for that. We're a lot of meats and cheeses around here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cured meat.
So you answered my question. My question for you for this episode was, what's your greatest fear? And you answered it already.
Excellent.
Sorry. Do you have a question for me?
Sorry. I do. I have to get my notes because I have notes and questions.
Have you ever showed your dick to an unsuspecting doctor? Yes.
If you were confronted with a bloody asshole. And not like a British one, not like a bloody asshole. You wouldn't call him an asshole. You'd call him something else.
Arse.
You'd probably just call him like bud or something like that, like mate or whatever. They don't like they use really fucking vulgar terms.
They say
cunt is like it's affectionate though, like oi, you cunt.
Right. Like it's such a bad word here, but cunt in Europe is like.
And it's such a great word. It's like word.
Bitch. It's really used all the time.
Oh, it's such a great word. I wish we used it more freely. Not negatively.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish we used it like the Brits.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what it was. When was the last time that you chose to learn something new?
When you said...
something new.
When you said when was the last time, I felt like for a second we were at a sleepover.
When was the last time?
Okay, to learn something new?
Yeah, like that you actively like chose to take up a new hobby or, you know, learn a new skill.
Probably like a year or so ago, I started reading and writing poetry and like reading books about how poetry works and like what it is. It was just one of those things, like it's like the way I feel about chess. Like, I wish I knew it, but I don't. And I just was, one day I was like, you know what? I want to know what poetry is. Like, I want to get it.
Yeah.
I want to
look at a poem. And there's no reason you can't. Right. And there's no reason you can't. If I put in the work, I can do it.
Right. I want to get it. I want to be able to like, oh, I understand this.
Yeah.
So there's that. But, you know, I read a lot of like nonfiction. I'm kind of always trying to like, I don't know, absorb something.
Mm-hmm.
But, and you know, I always say if I was rich, I'd go to school. Like, I'd be like Buster Bluth. I just have a million master's degrees.
Same. Same.
I would just always be all
the
time.
Yep. First would be the room full of doctors. Next would be a bunch of classes.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
What was the last time?
This is my big dream.
Well, I know you just started college.
Yeah.
So, I guess that's the answer. Yeah.
Well, actually, even more recently, so if you listener have listened before, you might know that we're working on a children's book together. And I went through that process of illustrating, having never taken an art class or learned how to draw in my life. Mm. I've never sat down with a tutorial and drawn something. Never. And aside from second grade art class, paint yourself portrait, I've never done that. So I actually bought a book of how to do kawaii doodles.
Ooh.
And I've been working my way through that. It's a 365 book and I've been doing at least one of them a day.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I'm trying to teach myself how to actually draw and not just wing it.
Yeah. I'm such a big fan of the do something for a minute every day and in 10 years you'll be awesome at it without feeling like you really tried.
Yeah. I have a few books that are like that or that I use like that, even if it's not how they were intended. I have one that's I think it's called Living Your Yoga.
Uh-huh.
That was actually gifted to me, which is really sweet. And it makes it all the more special. Uh-huh. But it's got a daily meditation or a daily yoga reminder or whatever. I have another one that's great quotes that I'll, just flip through. I love using books in that way, just a daily little nugget.
Yeah.
Or practices. It's a daily in a couple minutes or whatever it is.
Well, there's that thing that people misunderstand from Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, where people where he said if you do something for 10,000 hours, you'll be an expert on it. Which the thing people don't understand is that he was being descriptive, not prescriptive.
Right. Right. That's not literal.
Right. But just the idea of that is interesting. You can be good at anything. If you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And just if let's say I took violin lessons every fucking day, you tell me I'm not going to be kind of okay to do it at some point?
I imagine that with most things, and certainly with artistic talent or whatever, there is a predisposition. I think there's having rhythm or being able to see the world in an artistic way or whatever it is. But I think if you train that muscle or you train that part in your brain or whatever, there's no reason you can't become good at something.
Or at least adequate. It's just like okay.
It makes me think of, it wasn't necessarily about doing something, but it was about the fact that you can achieve anything you set your mind to. I was talking with my cousin and he was talking about when he was a kid, seeing a really nice car and being I want that.
Mm.
And my grandmother said to him, you won't ever have that. That's not our lot in life. We don't drive fancy cars. And he was well, why not? If I work hard and I have the money, I can buy the car. Anybody who has the money can buy the car.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. Yes, there are things that aren't possible because of money. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to something knowing something, learning something, be able to do something, just fucking do it. Put in the have you ever seen the documentary Jiro Dreams of Sushi?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, years ago.
It's this documentary about this old sushi chef who is the best sushi chef in the world. And it's just because he fucking darted as a poor, uneducated child in a sushi restaurant and just did it every day of his fucking life.
Right.
Now he's mad old and he's incredible.
And so he's the best. Right. He's put in more time than anyone else.
In that movie, they're like, did you ever take a day off? And he was like, when my dad died, I took half a day off to go to his funeral. But then I came back and worked.
Wow. That work ethic, though. That's wild. This is all obviously outside of, any sort of neurodivergency or whatever that might prevent you from doing something. But I think everybody has a threshold of their willpower. And if you exert maximum willpower, if you really try your hardest, and your hardest might not look like anybody else's hardest. You can achieve stuff. You can decide what you want to accomplish, and you can do it consciously.
Right.
It's not going to happen unless you choose to. Like, you're not going to become an expert at something. You're not going to learn about poetry by just thinking, wow, I really love to learn about poetry. You got to pick up a book. You got to pick up a pencil, right, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything's possible.
Anything is possible.
So I have a recommendation.
Do it. Recommendation.
Speaking of poetry, this is technically a poetry book, but it's not what most people think about when they think of poetry. I want to recommend the famous book I Remember by I Remember by Joe Brainard. It came out in 1975, but it's still published today. I actually just bought a new edition of it because I saw it and I was like, I need to own this. It's like a book length. It's like 300 pages, but all it is over and over again, the sentence, I remember something. Oh, and wow. It's the most incredible, like, self-portrait I've ever experienced.
That's really powerful.
Like, I wanted to, like, just, like, I want to just give you a few examples of, like, the kind of stuff you see.
That sounds like something I have to have.
It's, and by the way, it's such a breezy read. And, like, you can see his stream of consciousness. Like, one thing will lead to another. So you see him going from childhood to adulthood, back to childhood. And, like, you could see how his brain is working. And sometimes there will be things that are so mundane, and then the next one will hit you like a gut punch. So just an example. I remember the only time I ever saw my mother cry, I was eating apricot pie. I remember how much I cried seeing South Pacific, the movie. I remember how good a glass of water tastes after a dish of ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
I remember when I got a 5-year pin for not missing a single morning of Sunday school for 5 years. I remember when I went to a come as your favorite person party as Marilyn Monroe. Joe Brainard is also he's also a painter. He's a queer poet and painter, or he was. And he talks about, like, having this rural background, but being queer and, like, how hard that was, all within this very simple method of I remember. And I've been doing it myself, like, just writing like this. And I'd say anybody should try this. It's so much. First of all, it's fun. And it's so good. It's so, like, it's such a hack. It's such a brain hack. Like, just, I remember. Like, write 10 right. I remembers and just see what the fuck comes out of you.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love that.
I Remember by Joe Brainard. Absolutely check it out.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Gold.
You can find it.
Beautiful. My recommendation is not as profound. I mean,
not as profound as a glass of water after ice cream?
No. What is, though? Yeah. My recommendation is something that I'm watching through for the probably like 7th or 8th time, I would say.
Wow.
And it is Schitt's Creek.
Okay. Let's talk about Schitt's Creek.
The relationships in Schitt's Creek are the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. All of them. All the relationships. The husband and wife relationship, the father-daughter, father-son, mother-daughter, mother-son, friends, lovers. The relationships in this show are so ridiculously beautiful to me. The way they love each other is so incredible. And I love watching them realize it.
Right.
It's really beautiful.
Is that how you describe what's really going on in that show? They're realizing that they love each other.
Yeah, they're realizing how much they love each other, right, and they're learning to love themselves. I know that that's, like, you know, cliche and cheesy and whatever, but, you know, they're for anyone who's not seen the show yet, they're a wealthy family that's stripped of everything, have to move to the middle of nowhere, this little town. They end up living in a motel. So they get cut down to bare bones, and they have to really learn who they are. They see, you know, who they really are when you take away all the frills and distractions. And yeah, it's like a very intense personal growth journey, like on a, you know, on steroids in like this little, you know, 3-year period or whatever it is, where they're just really learning about themselves in this place where they never thought they would. And the relationships and the love between the characters is just so beautiful. It's just such a beautiful example of love.
Well, and this is like the 6th or 7th time you've watched it.
Yeah, I will rewatch it forever.
You think so?
I think so, because it makes me feel good. It makes me laugh hysterically. Catherine O'Hara is just something else. Yeah, I think it's one of those shows that I will rewatch for the rest of my life. Like, you know, like most people watch Friends.
Yes. Not me, though.
I used to love Friends, and I have to be honest, I feel like because of it not aging so well, I'm like, man, there's better stuff out there now.
I know. It kind of blows my mind how much younger people like it.
Yeah.
Like young people are really into it from exposure on like Netflix. Mm-hmm. And it's wild to me because it's like, I mean, I liked it when we were all liking it, but it's gained the significance since then that blows my mind a little bit.
Yeah, it's a little bizarre.
But hey, like whatever you like.
Yeah.
This has been Cuckoo Bananas. Kate Gainey, thank you so much for being here.
Always. Thanks for having me.
And thank God. Thank you for listening, everyone. And thank goodness this show exists, because when I was going through my pain, I thought this will make a good episode of Cuckoo Bananas. Otherwise, if I can't turn it into creativity, then what's the point of this pain?
What's the damn point?
What's the point of the pain? All right, everybody. Feel good. Feel happy. I'll see you next time.
Bye.
Do 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 do.